Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to episode 59 of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we chat with two-time West Coast Premiership player, Ashley McIntosh. Ashley began his AFL journey in 1991 with the West Coast Eagles. The tough defender spent 13 seasons at the Eagles, playing a total of 242 games, including the Premiership wins of 1992 and 1994. Ashley, renowned for his brute strength, was a regular representative for Western Australia in State of Origin football. In this episode, Ashley talks about the West Coast Eagles' successful period in the 90s, the emotions of winning two premierships, playing on the gun forwards Ablett, Lockett, Carey and Dunstall, the demolition derby against Fremantle, his bench-pressing record and his knee issues. I hope you enjoy the 59th member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Ashley McIntosh. Ashley McIntosh, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Really appreciate you sharing some time for a chat, mate.
G'day, Trent. Thanks for having me.
Mate, looking forward to delving into your great career with the West Coast Eagles. But before we talk all things footy, what are you currently doing with yourself, mate? And do you still have any footy involvement still?
Trent, this is nothing exciting, mate. I've just got a day job. I work as a financial advisor, work out of the Claremont Football Club, would you believe, where I started my football.
Yeah, right. So what, you just hire out a little office there or something, do you, with the financial planning side of things?
I've just got a shared office with about 10 to 15 other people. We share a boardroom and a kitchen and toilet, et cetera. Yeah, it's good banter in here. It's good fun.
So is that sort of your connection with footy still, mate? Do you still have any sort of direct involvement, or is it just going to the Claremont Footy Club is as good as it gets at the moment?
Well, I did coach my kids, actually. I did 3 years with my oldest boy and 4 for my youngest. But as they get to that age where they get a little bit embarrassed that their dad's the coach, then that's the time to hang the boots up, mate. So I had a pretty good stint there, and time to move on.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, mate, really excited to look at your footy journey, as I said. So let's chat some footy. You were selected by the West Coast Eagles in the 1989 National Draft with pick 112. Was that a father-son pick? Is that how you got to the West Coast Eagles, is obviously with your father's involvement with the Waffle?
Yeah, it was a strange time with the father and son, because obviously the Eagles, I think, have only been around since 87. So to actually have them and to have kids in the 90s at the age of 16 or 17, it's sort of unheard of. So what they did is they got some WA VFL players, and they actually included those VFL games in the scenario, plus some waffle games as well. I'm not exactly sure how they did it, but I was able to be chosen, I think, as a pre-draft selection. But I think in those days, then they just put you in as the last draft pick. And in those days, the draft was quite big, having 52 guys on the list plus a rookie, a couple of people on the rookie list. Then the draft was well over 100, and I think I came in at 100. Yeah, as you say, 112.
Your dad played with St Kilda, so was there any conversation about you potentially going to St Kilda as well in the same circumstance, or was West Coast always going to be the destination?
Well, I'm not sure how the father-son worked with St Kilda and the VFL, but I think my dad might have played, might have been 53 games, and I think that was the eligibility for the Eagles. I think he would have had to play over 50 for me to be taken father and son. I know that my dad did make a phone call to St Kilda at the time when the Eagles were interested to see if they had any interest, and true to form, mate, they had zero interest in me. And, you know, I think that's sort of true to the way it was back then. The VFL guys are only looking at the at the guys in Victoria, sort of New South Wales, potentially on the border, but they weren't overly interested in the WA boys. And St Kilda, you know, of course, had never heard of me and had, absolutely no interest.
I'll tell you what, though, what a draft it was for the Eagles that year. You look back, Peter Matera, Tony Evans, Brett Heady, and Ashley McIntosh, you know, four premiership players, multiple premiership players amongst that group. It was a pretty handy draft for the Eagles that year.
Yeah, it was a great one. It was, Mick Moylan, I think, was the recruiting officer at the time. And he, you know, he had a very good record. You can probably argue it's the most important job at the club. But just getting those late picks like Brett Heady and Dean Kemp, 80s and 90s, that was a real bonus getting those guys, because they end up being the best couple of players in the squad in the early 90s, those guys. So, it was just a fantastic draft.
And it must have been nice going through the journey with those boys as well. Like, you guys would have played a lot of footy over the journey, and just to share that time with, your Bretts and Tony Evans and Matera's and Dean Kemp's, like, that must have been pretty fun in itself.
Yeah, it was. A lot of the guys that we knew around the area, I guess you can say in the early 90s, a lot of the Eagles draft came from local grassroots football. Like, a lot of Subiaco Colts and reserves and league players were drafted, probably through Trevor Nisbet, who had an association with Subiaco. But I knew quite a few of the guys in there. Probably the good thing about it being a young guy in there is that, we had over 50 guys on the list. So there's quite a few players there that didn't play, but they're on the list and they're there at training and just sort of being developed. Whereas nowadays they've got a lot less on there, and probably going in there as a young guy might be a little bit intimidating, having all these old senior players there and only a handful of young guys.
So after missing 1990, you spent a few weeks in the Waffle before making your AFL debut in 1991. And then from that moment, you maintained your spot in the team and featured in the AFL Grand Final at Waverley. What a whirlwind beginning.
Yeah, I was actually drafted out of school in 89. And basically how it worked back then, they said, okay, you're only in year 12, just sort of leaving year 12, and you've got a late birthday. We want you to play a year down at Claremont. So I went down there and played a year of Colts and reserves down there. You know, I had a lot of fun and did a lot of the things which all my mates were doing, going out, having a good time, having a few beers. So that was a really good year. But once the pre-season came for the 91 year, the 91 pre-season, I was back into training full-time, and that's when I actually signed my playing contract with the Eagles in the pre-season of 91. So I was actually obliged to turn up to training and do a proper pre-season. As it turned out, I got injured in early 91, and I missed the first couple of games of the Claremont season. So as a result, I missed a couple of games. I went and played a couple of reserves games at Claremont, and I played reasonably well. They put me up in the league side, played five games of league football at centre half forward, and then I got the call up. Surprisingly, I got the call up to play, I think it was around 11 or 12 in the 91 season, to play for the Eagles.
And then you kept your spot on that side for the remainder of the year and got to play in an AFL grand final, and the first one not at the MCG, it was at Waverley Park. That must have been a great experience in itself. And the match, you know, reflecting on it, was a terrific game for three quarters before, I guess, Hawthorn really showed their class of that season and ran away with it. But how do you sort of reflect on that day, ending that first proper season you had in the AFL?
Well, I guess when you come out of school and you've only normally played 10 games per year and you sort of roll into a little bit of a pre-season and you do all the training and there's, playing reserves league for Claremont, then sort of in the AFL. I think if you told me that I was going to play on Dermot Brereton in an AFL grand final when I started pre-season of 91, I definitely wouldn't have believed you. But to be honest with you, it was such a long season and we did a lot of travel. I was really used to the travel and getting there and playing. I think we played 3 weeks in a row leading into that grand final. To be honest with you, like a lot of the other players, I was exhausted and was just happy that the year was over, to be honest, and just sort of looking forward to 6 or 8 weeks off before the preseason started again. But looking at the game, I think we started pretty well. We were probably the best side for the year, but didn't peak at the right time of year. And I think Hawthorn were a bigger, stronger team, some of their forwards there, the late Paul Deere and Dermot Brereton was a good size, and we had some pretty skinny sort of athletes in there, which I think we just got brushed aside in that AFL grand final. And I think by half to three quarter time, I think we knew that we had run out of steam and they're going to run over the top of us. We just didn't have the legs.
The following years were pretty good, and I'm going to ask you about those very soon. But I'm really interested, obviously, we've known you as, and I guess in the latter part of your career, as one of the great fullbacks and someone that played on some of the big forwards and so forth. But your early days, you spent a lot of time up forward. What did you prefer, and what was the player that West Coast drafted you as? Was it more as a forward or as a defender?
Well, I think most key position players get drafted as forwards. I think they used to. And people have been known to say that the best backmen are the failed forwards. So I played it a little bit in the early 90s forward. So I was definitely drafted as a forward. At school, I played centre-half back and centre-half forward. Going into Colts and reserves and league at Claremont, I was definitely, like I said, half forward, full forward. Unfortunately for me, Peter Simic was a pretty handy full forward at the Eagles. I think he kicked close to 100 in 1990, kicked over 100 in 1991. So I wasn't going to take his spot. So I floated around the forward line. But mainly in the early 90s, I played really as a versatile, anywhere where, there was a player that sort of needed to be stopped, or if there wasn't, then I'd play forward and a half or flank or centre-half forward. So each week was quite exciting, sort of turning up each week to the game and not knowing if my name was going to be in the forward line or the back line, which sort of kept it pretty interesting. As time went by and, I sort of went through a little bit of a career struggle with bad knees. I sort of worked out pretty soon. The only time that I got injured really with these sore knees was when I played in the forward line. So pushing me back in the back line was a lot more, played a lot more consistent football. I was actually able to see the season out without too many injuries.
Let's look at 92 and 94. Terrific seasons for the West Coast Eagles. And 92, what a year for many reasons. Another 17 games added to your games tally. So 34 in your first two seasons. Another grand final appearance. But this time, he's went the next step and took it out of Victoria for the very first time with a really good win over the Cats. What was the emotion of the day like? And the result must have just been huge internally, but I guess externally in Western Australia.
Yeah, I guess the 91 was such a big talking point over in WA, that the fact that we'd lost and we finished on top of the ladder. And I think we timed our run a lot better in 92. I had a bit of an injury plague season. I probably had the second year blues for the first half of the year, and then I got a little bit fitter and I kept out of trouble with the injuries and finished off well. But I guess we were more relieved than anything else. We just didn't want to go over there and lose another grand final, losing two in a row over there would have been pretty embarrassing, and we would have got a little bit of a reputation of being not being able to handle the pressure, I guess. So we're extremely keen to win that second grand final.
And then to back it up in 94, Ashley, that must have been just an even sensational feeling as well. Experienced with most of the 92 crew, but I guess in every grand final, there's always some hard luck stories, and there was a couple in 92, and they got a chance in 94, which would have been nice to celebrate that time with them.
Yeah, I think it might have been David Hines and David Hart, which two guys who missed out. There's probably a couple of the guys that I missed out, but yeah, great to be a part of it. And we catch up probably once or twice a year just to reminisce and have a few beers. But I think in 92 we're probably far more mature unit than in 92. But as I say, everyone looks back on the 92 one because it's your first one, and the first one's always the best.
That 94 season, though, like, I don't think anyone was going to beat you in the finals. Like, you had that really devastating win against Melbourne in the prelim, like, and I think Brett Heady kicked six and things were looking dangerous. Then the Cats just didn't really stand a chance. You guys just played a really top brand of footy, and, you know, to have an 80-point margin in a grand final like that, I think it just really illustrated how dominant you guys were that season.
Yeah, I think, I think we hit form at the right time as well. We're pretty good all year, but I think we matched up very well, particularly in the midfield with Geelong. So they're best Couch Hocking type players who used to run around and get the 25-30 a game. And we just had players like the Don Pikes and Dean Kempsey sort of used to nullify those players and go and get quite a few possessions themselves. So I think we matched up pretty well in the midfield, and we probably had a couple of players defensively to cover their gun players in their forward line. So Geelong were a pretty good matchup for the Eagles, I think.
So the matchups, very important. McIntosh goes down on Brownless. At the other end of the ground, Darcy has Sumich.
And already some pushing and shoving with McIntosh and Brownless. Brownless, a confidence player.
Two great years, two dominant years in a home and away season, then you peaked at the finals and so forth. And obviously, I guess you look at 91, 92, 94, so three out of 4 years you've made a grand final. If you had to narrow it down to one or two particular things, what made you guys the side that you were in those years?
I think really probably the main thing is we just had a very talented side. I mean, if you look at the back at the history of the teams that have won, you just look at their players and they're just great players. You know, we just had, the Matiras, the Kemps, Don Pike on ball. We had the Jakoviches and McKennas, Worsfold, in the back line. And although we didn't have great keys in our forward, we had some really good half forwards. Peter Sumich was a great forward. But we also had a very good combination, I think, of defensive and attacking players, and that combination seems to work well. You can also argue that we're going through the game was probably going through a little bit of a defensive, man on man type play, and that suited Mick Malthouse's coaching style. And we responded pretty well to that. I think we had the players to play those roles, and we're able to nullify great players like Geelong, who really, if you look back at their players, they probably should have won a flag or two.
You had the chance to play on some of the greatest forwards and players ever in the game, Ash, and I speak in names of Lockett, Dunstall, Ablett, Modrak, Kernahan, Lloyd, just to name a few, and there's a few more that you would have lined up against during your time. No doubt everyone would have posed some sort of form of difficulty playing on them, but who was the hardest in your eyes just to get that matchup right, getting that positioning right, stopping their leading patterns, their aerial stuff? Who was the one that you found the hardest out of the big name full forwards in your time as a defender?
Yeah, there were some great players there, wasn't there? It was a real era of full forwards. And, I think the game plans of a lot of those clubs was to get it to the full forward. So it's not as though the full forward was a decoy. They normally went to the full forward and the crummers around the front and around the back. I would say I was surprised how fast and mobile Tony Lockett was. He was really quick, and when the ball hit the ground, he was surprisingly agile. Like he could bend over at pace, and he'd scare the crap out of most players in front of him. So not a lot of people dropped into the hole. I just reckon a guy like him, who most of his career at the Saints played in a pretty average side, and was still able to sit there and kick 100 goals a game at an oval like Moorabbin. Bad weather, muddy conditions. I think that's just unbelievable. Obviously Jason Dunstall kicked over 1,000 goals as well. He probably had a better start to play out of. But you look at players like, I guess you talk about sleepless nights, guys like Gary Ablett Sr. He's one of those guys who, you never really felt like you had him covered. So he could just do anything, stand on someone's head or make you think that he's going for the mark. He'd shoot around the back and crumb one, and just sort of run into an open goal. For a guy to play, half his career on the half-forward flank on the wing and then go down and win the leading goal kicker in front of Dunstall and Lockett for a couple of years, and could play on ball and get 30 touches. I think he was a freak and probably the most talented player that's been, I would have thought. But I actually, in the latter years, didn't enjoy playing on Matthew Richardson much because I didn't have much of a tank on me and I was used to sitting in the goal square and, God, he used to run. So he would play me up the ground. He'd run back and try and get the kick in from his full back, and then he'd sprint back to the goal square. And I was, to be honest with you, I was buggered by quarter time, not half time. So he was okay in the earlier years, but later on in the year, my career when I was a little unfit, because I couldn't do all the training with my bad knees, he was very difficult to play on, I reckon. Matthew Lord is obviously a champion. Once all those Lockett's and Dunstall's sort of went, once they sort of left, then Matthew Lord seemed to be the best one there for a while. He was outstanding. And the other one that I didn't mention, obviously, guys who were hard to play on. I mean, Wayne Carey, yep. Pagan's Paddock. For a guy who's the only one in their forward line, I'm pretty sure they're going to kick it to him. So he could lead, start 25 metres out. He could lead in any direction, and they've obviously got their codes going or whatever, where to kick it. They're very hard to stop that. I probably think that, Wayne Carey, if you're going to pick up a 17-year-old as a coach for a career, I reckon I'd pick up Wayne Carey. I think he's probably the best player that's played.
I'll tell you what, there's been some superstars, and I'm just laughing when you're talking about Pagan's Paddock because, I've spoken to a few North Melbourne's on this players on this podcast, and everyone knew what Pagan's Paddock was and what they were trying to do, but they still couldn't really combat it. They just executed it so well, didn't they, the Kangaroos?
Yeah, there was. I mean, just an era there. I mean, he was just kicking, sevens and eights every week and very, 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 very hard thing to stop. And what people forget as well, I think that he just brings, so many other people into the game, as the captain is. And, instead of going back 15 metres out and sort of, kicking seven instead of six, he used to give off handballs when he didn't have to. He's a real team player, and that's what you want. That's what you want as a coach. But definitely through my time when I was playing, he was the man. He was the best playing, no doubt.
We all love team success, and that's why we play sport, for that team success. And you were able to endure that 92 and 94. But 1998 must have been a nice year for you personally, Ashley, because you won the best and fairest. And usually, let's be honest, best and fairest, the midfielders generally take the reins with those types of awards. You got All Australian. That must have been a really pleasing year for yourself to be recognised on a couple of different fronts.
Yeah, that was by far my best pre-season that I did. I certainly came into that year nice and fit. Probably on a team perspective, we probably weren't as fit as what we normally were, and we didn't have a great year in 98. I think we just squeezed into the finals, but that probably means that the ball comes down into the back line a little bit more, and I get more play, and the guys in the forward line get a little bit less, and our on ball didn't really have their normal impact that they had been having the last few years before that. So it was nice to play every game and get a little bit of form up.
There's McIntosh, breaks the tackle, easy stuff for this fellow. He's kick seven.
Throughout your career, you spoke about the issues you had with your knees. It seems like that was sort of occurring for a long time. How much did that affect you, and what was the heights of the pain that you had to play through when you had some of the knee injuries and the pains and so forth with them?
The bad knees were sort of they started really in the early 90s when I used to have one of those kneecaps that used to sublux or dislocate. So through the 93 year, which is my third year in, early on, we were playing at the Wacky Ground, and the Wacky Ground was rock hard.
Mm.
And I think we had a few injuries there. I know Brett Heady dislocated his shoulder there a couple of times, landing on the hard surface. But that's, the start of my troubles when the knee dislocated there. That probably came out another 30 times throughout the year. And back in those days, there was no knee bandage specific for that injury. Didn't really know how to treat it or how to prevent it from happening. It's more taping it up, and then the tape gets loose after about 5 minutes, and you can put bandages or guards on there, but that really works. I struggled through that 93, 94, 95 years, and then Ray-Ban brought out a guard or a brace specific for that injury, to keep in the patella so it doesn't dislocate. Once I got that on me, then that was the end of my knee troubles. The problem there is that all the damage is done. So, a lot of the cartilage had been worn away, in the knee. So it's just really about sort of managing pre-seasons and all that. So I did a lot more running on the sand rather than on sort of roads in the grass. In terms of my pre-season, and here and there, I just had to go in for cleanups because bits of cartilage had broken off and got caught in the joint or whatever. But there's something that if I had my time again, I probably would have played on through that first year, and that's probably when I did most of the damage.
How are they going now, like post-football and, with kids and all that sort of stuff? Are they okay now, or do you still have the odd pain here and there, or?
Well, I can walk out in holes of golf, so
that's the main thing.
That's okay, but I can't run. If you know what I mean, I wouldn't wouldn't be able to go for a run. In fact, I've just had an injection in both of my knees to put some gel in there to provide a bit of padding for me, and it seems to be working really well. I'm just trying to put off knee replacements as long as I can, but I'm sure that'll happen at some stage.
Well, I'm glad you can get 18 holes of golf in, that's for sure. Hey, mate, we're in the last sort of 10 minutes of having a chat. During your career, I can remember two big brawls that the Eagles were involved in. The first one was against Footscray in 94 when Brett Heady received that heavy hit and Suma had that famous, choker hold against, with Danny Southern performing that one. And then Fremantle in 2000. With a big all-in brawl there with Dale Kickett and a lot of the West Coast Eagles guys. Two highly physical matches. what can you recall of them? And did you get involved in any of those? I was trying to look for footage the other day, but I couldn't quite see the number 11. So did you sort of get involved in those in some way, shape or form?
Well, I remember the Footscray one in 94. I was playing at full back on Chris Grant. So when that actually happened, I reckon I was standing in the goal square at the city end of Subiaco Oval. So Chris Grant got over there pretty quickly. Actually, you could see that something was going on, and I just sort of jogged over behind him. But by the time I got there, it was sort of all over. But there was definitely a lot of concern in the once we got inside. There's certainly a lot of concern about what had happened and the welfare of Peter Sumich. But apparently he stopped breathing and he thought he had gone. He thought he was it was all over for him. But I didn't really get involved too much in that one, to be honest. The other one was the Derby, of course, Frio Dockers. I mean, I've never really been one to start anything or get it too involved. I'm just sort of there to play the game, play footy. But might have had a little bit more involvement in the one in 2000, certainly more than the Footscray one.
Before we finish this out, I usually give my guest a few quick handball questions, Ashley. So this one, you were well known for holding the bench pressing records at the Eagles. Wayne Carey has publicly stated you're one of the strongest players he's played against. What was your personal best on the weights, and how much time did you spend in the gym to ensure that you held the number one mantle?
Oh, well, didn't spend that much time in there, just the normal pre-season couple of times a week. You know, the weights a couple of times a week. What was my PB? I think it might have been 165. I know Fraser Gerry came in as a youngster, and I think he might have got to 170. So he knocked off the record. But it's something that they don't do that much anymore. The bench press used to be the thing to get you stronger in those days in the early 90s. But I'm not even sure that they do much of it nowadays. But I certainly didn't do any more weights than anyone else. I probably needed to do some weights, some strengthening weights on my legs to take a little bit of pressure off my knees as opposed to getting top heavy. So, you know, I'm not sure how smart it was.
I'm going to give you four names, mate. I just want you to share one word to describe these four individuals from West Coast Eagles. The first one, the senior coach, Mick Malthouse. How would you describe Mick in one word?
One word. Gee, that's hard. he was intense. He was defensive. He was a good motivator, very good motivator.
Chrissy Lewis,
extremely talented forward, likes a good time, and he's a good guy.
Glenn Jakovich,
I think Glenn is one of those guys who got the most out of himself with footy. He was dedicated. He went hard at his footy and he got the rewards. And a great player.
And the last one, star of the 92 grand final, Peter Matera.
Ruga Matera, yeah. I mean, he was probably the most talented guy in our team, and he showed it there, I think, on grand final day. Just, one of these guys that one of the fastest guys in the side, but can change direction pretty quickly. But a good guy and just a real talent.
Ashley, who is the best character at the club? And I speak of character, could have a beer with, a bit of banter, someone you enjoyed their company. Who would be the one that stand out the most at the Eagles for you?
Oh, I guess there was, depending on the era that you're talking about, I suppose, a bit of an extrovert would be Brett Heady. He was a bit of fun around the club. Always got something to say and joking the whole time. Guy McKenna was good. the younger guys, you know, Ben Cousins, he was a good young kid. Who else?
Maybe who wasn't in that group? There might have been. I think you're a pretty tight knit group, from what I've heard with previous guests and so forth. A lot of good fellas in there.
Oh, there was. I mean, yeah, there's you get people from all walks of life, don't you? Join into a footy club, and you sort of cling to the ones you enjoy the company, and there's plenty to choose from when there's a squad of 52.
And the very last question, mate, who is the team you'd love to beat the most? Obviously, the sole Western Australian side for there for a little while, and obviously you had to come over to Victoria quite a bit. Was there any other interstate side you love beating? Was there anyone particular about in Victoria that you love to defeat during your time in the AFL?
Yeah, it's funny. When I first turned up in 91, it was Melbourne, because they'd had, I think they'd had a couple of close games and a final against Melbourne. And I can recall the boys singing in the shower after we beat them over in Melbourne one time in 91. I think it probably turned to Essendon after that. I think we got knocked out by Essendon in a couple of finals in the early 90s. So we loved beating Essendon. Also, Malthouse had a bit of a rivalry with Kevin Sheedy, I think. So he was a little bit more fired up and intense with those Essendon games. And I guess when you get to the end a little bit, there's Geelong. So, playing them in two grand finals was a bit of a rivalry there. Maybe just before that, Hawthorn. Certainly it's nice to beat the good sides, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Ashley McIntosh, thank you for jumping on the 90s Club Footy podcast and sharing your journey with the West Coast Eagles, mate. It's been a great pleasure reminiscing with you, and thanks for coming on.
Good on you, Trent. Thank you.
Number 11, Ashley McIntosh.
That's the end of episode number 59. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all of the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so via the website Buy Me a Coffee. Just search the 90s Club Footy Podcast to show your support. Next week, we catch up with former Geelong Cats, Steve Hocking.
Tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.